So welcome to this special edition of the Uncanny X-Piles. With you, as always, is myself, Andy, and...
Jeff Jackson.
Yes, of course, we do the Uncanny X-Piles on comicattack.net, and we are here now to talk about X-Men First Class, which was, in my opinion, a kick-ass X-Men movie that came out this past weekend. We're just going to kind of shoot the shit, just talk about it, and give you our thoughts on everything First Class. So, Jeff, let's just start out. Did you like it? Did you dislike it? Somewhere in between?
Okay, I am somewhere in between. There were lots of things that I really liked. But really, my bottom line with the whole movie is that I think for people who are, diehard comic book and X-Men fans who know everything there is to know about the X-Men will hate this movie. And in fact, just talking to friends online who are of that ilk, there's a lot of people who do not like this movie. But then for folks who don't know, this is their first introduction to the X-Men, or maybe they just saw the first three or four movies. Then if I can look at it like from that perspective, then this was an excellent, excellent movie. So I'm hearing mixed reviews out there from folks, but overall I thought it was a strong movie, but I do have some issues, but we can talk about that.
Well, I totally debunk your theory because while I don't consider myself as vast an expert as yourself, since, you've obviously been around longer than me and read a shit ton more, I still think I've read my fair share of X-Men, but I fucking love the movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and I think if you can just go into it knowing that, this movie is not made, it's made to draw people into the mythos. It was not intended to be made for X-Men, continuity buffs. I mean, it was not made for that purpose, nor should it have been made for that purpose.
Right, and I kind of have that objective standpoint going into the movies. My whole thing with the movies is, look, the comics are the comics. That's what counts. That's what matters. The movies are their own thing, detached from the comics. They're going to do things differently. It's a different audience. They have to. So I kind of go in with that attitude. So it doesn't bother me when they stray from the comic. I expect them to.
Right.
I'd be shocked if they didn't.
But here's
that sample, I loved it. I thought it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, here's the other thing that's interesting. This is the first, I think, this is the first non-Marvel Studios Marvel movie made since kind of all of the buzz of, Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and Hulk and Thor and all of that buzz. And so I think some people went into it, at least sitting in the theater and hearing voices around me, there were some people who really went into it thinking it was going to be like a Marvel Studios movie. And I don't think people, the normal moviegoer is not going to realize that there's a difference between the Avengers movies that are being made and these, X-Men movies, and that they're not in the same shared universe. And they're not really even made the same way. You could kind of tell that this movie was a lot different from Iron Man and Thor. I mean, it just had a different story to tell. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I just think for most people going in, they were like, wait a second, how come there wasn't a hidden thing at the end after the trailers? Or how come, Nick Fury didn't show up? Or what, whatever. And it's like, well, because this was made by a completely different studio, different creators. Yes, they're Marvel characters, but it's not tied in with that one. So I think there's that distinction that I think people need to go into thinking that this is not like Iron Man. This is not like Thor, but it still is really good.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I fucking hated Iron Man.
Right.
I thought Iron Man was terrible.
Really?
Iron Man 1 was okay. Iron Man 2, I passed out during, man.
That was just
a big stroke fest for Robert Downey Jr., in my opinion. Thor, I still have to see, so I'll withhold judgment. It looks promising to me, though. It looks like something I'd enjoy. But I think if there's one Marvel property that works detached from the rest of the Marvel Universe. It's Marvel Cosmic and the X-Men.
Yeah.
And I didn't see any problem with this movie being detached from Avengers, being detached from Thor, being separated from Captain America. I don't think that's a problem. Exactly. Would I I'd love to see Wolverine on the Avengers one day, sure. But if it doesn't happen and I keep getting X-Men movies like this, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I just, you know, for folks out there who may be listening to this and have not seen it, don't go into it thinking it's going to be Iron Man or Thor.
Thor. I stayed till after the credits. There was nothing.
Right, right. But even in terms of story-wise, the way that they told the story, just it did not have that kind of Thor or Iron Man kind of feel. But again, I thought that's good. Speaking of story, what did you think of kind of the overall story?
I thought that this played like a movie. I don't want to, yes, it was an excellent superhero movie, but I think anybody detached from the superhero genre can go into this and enjoy it as a film, because you had two strong protagonists, one with a darker side, both with an excellent backstory that was easily understood, that was incredibly expanded upon and just very well executed throughout the entire film. I thought the wit was there. I thought the pacing was there. I loved the decision to not make Xavier a geeky, sniveling dork. I thought it was a great move to make him have charisma, to make him have character, to make him have, you know, a sense of suave to him.
A line that he used.
Yeah, I mean, that was great. I mean, and then you insert the comic book one-liner jokes with, I'm not shaving my head for Cerebro. Like, that was hilarious. Like, you know, like, there were little tidbits in there for the X fans. And I think if X fans are able to detach themselves, you know, from what they'd expect from the comics to see here on the film, I think it's tough to walk away from this one hating it. Like,
yeah.
I just thought yes, Magneto, that actor, I don't know his name off the top of my head. Do you know his name?
Michael Fassbender.
Sure. Sure, he stole the show, but at the same time, I think James Marsden, right? That's his name?
Marsden was Cyclops in the other movies.
Oh, sorry, wait. What was Xavier's name?
Xavier was James McAvoy.
That's right. Yeah, I knew it was James something. Yeah, I thought he did a superb job with that character. Because, I mean, you talk about a character that can fall into the pit, like, just like a pitfall of just dry and lame and boring. It's Xavier. I mean, sure, he fought in Korea. Yeah, he did a lot of cool stuff. Xavier and Magneto were just great, really solid characters in this film, which I think is how it needs to be in order for it to be successful. And I think they really, really captured it. They could have gone down different roads, and they didn't take those roads, and I think it worked for the better.
I loved the tying it in with the Cuban Missile Crisis, because with that as your backdrop, you have, number one, it does tie into X-Men mythos, you know? And number two, it ties in, it's automatic tension builder, you know? I mean, that was, in history, that was such a tense time period. And so throwing the mutants into the mix of that, I just thought was a really good idea, a really good choice for, if you're going to do a period piece, that was a good place to do it.
See, my only beef with that was the scene. Okay, and just a heads up to everyone who's listening, there are going to be some spoilers as we carry on this dialogue. So just a heads up. I just did have one tiny, tiny beef with Xavier. And you just mentioned it, like the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that's kind of like the climax at the end of the movie where you have the U.S. fleet and the Russian fleet kind of at a standoff with that nuke ship, right? If they're going to cross the line and whatever happens. And eventually they launch the missiles on the one island that has all the mutants on it. What happened to Xavier's TK, and why was it not present in this movie? I felt like there was a little too much emphasis. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Magneto. I thought he was a fantastic character in this film. However, I thought he was almost made to be too great. I mean, there was the line where Xavier says to Magneto when they're training at the X-Mansion, he turns the satellite dish. And Xavier says something like, you can be even more powerful than I. While I don't necessarily disagree with that, I think that argument can be made, However, I think Xavier's, you know, psychic powers in connection with his TK powers are what make him so, you know, so prevalent, so strong as a mutant. And in this movie, there was no reference to his TK. So, for example, in that final scene when the missiles are raining down on that island, it's Magneto that stops them all because they're all made of metal. However, I feel like Xavier could have had a serious impact in that scene with his TK. I mean, just, you know, telekinetically taking control of those missiles, he could have done something. Do you have any thoughts about that, Jeff?
Yes, I do. Xavier doesn't have TK. He never has. Well, he does in a few issues in the very, very beginning, but Xavier has never had, he's never been a telekinetic. He's only been a telepath. Whereas Jean has been,
not even in the 90s.
No, he's never been a telekinetic.
Seriously?
Yeah. You're going on and on about that. I just wanted to say, wait a second. He's never been telekinetic. That's why he has to use other, he can control other people's minds and he can get them to use other thing. But yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Look it up. Go Google or go Wikipedia.
Xavier. What about Jean Grey? She has TK.
Jean Grey has both. Yes.
So why doesn't that makes no sense. I'm really confused. My mind is blown.
It's two different power sets. It's like Emma Frost having telepathy but turning into a diamond form.
Right, right.
But I mean, Emma Frost doesn't have telekinetic abilities.
Oh, that's true. I guess she doesn't. I you know what? I guess with Jean Grey, I just kind of assume they both went hand in hand.
Yeah, and then like characters like Psylocke have both.
Right.
But not every telepath is a telekinetic, and not every telekinetic is a telepath.
Well, goddamn.
you learn something new every day. That's awesome.
But didn't Xavier train Jean in her use of telekinesis, like, very prevalently?
There were, I'd have to go back and look at the first couple issues, but of the original X-Men series, but there were a few where he did have that, he did have some telekinetic powers, but then it was quickly moved aside, or it was just never mentioned again. So, but, you know, I don't know, maybe there are other X fans out there who could email us and let us know.
Oh, you're right. You're definitely right. Holy shit. Yeah. I guess I just kind of assumed if he can, you know, control minds, why can't he move things with? All right. There you go.
Well, there you go. So now the portrayal of Xavier is actually pretty, pretty damn good, right?
Yeah. Hell yeah. And I loved the choice to make him, like I said, I mean, honestly, I think the key to that character being as successful as he was in this movie was how he wasn't, you know, a nerdy, awkward guy. I mean, they did that with Beast, and that worked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the key that, like, he was a leader. You know, he was an adult. He was a man. You know, that worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I loved the character of Xavier. The only thing that just bothered me was every time he used his powers, he had to put his fingers to his temple. That kind of was just like, oh, okay, you know.
But he did it subtly.
He did, and you had to have a way. I mean, you had to have a way to show him using his powers without it being some weird, like, you know, thought lines that were being, you know, coming out of his head. You know what I mean? Like, visually, you have to be able to show him using his powers, and I thought, you know, that way at least it's not dorky and they don't have to CGI it, you know.
I mean, maybe they could have, like, you know, had him do it the first few times early on in the film, and then later on we see him develop his own skill and he doesn't need to use it, but you can just kind of, you know, conclude that he is.
Right. Right. Yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely. Magneto, I thought he did steal the show. The actor there was perfect casting. He was phenomenal. I mean, he had the right level of anger that Magneto has. But he also had a fantastic level of empathy, and that's what makes Magneto such a complex and wonderful character. Is that he has these two sides of him where, I mean, he's got that villain side to him, but he also has that you really, you know where he's coming from, and And I thought that he was great. And I love that scene where he goes into, he's in Argentina, and he goes into the bar.
Yes.
With those guys, the pig farmer and the...
Taylor.
And the tailor. And what, and I loved what they did visually with the knife, and how he threw it at the guy, but then immediately brought it back and had the guys and stabbed the guy's hand. Oh, that was so badass.
And you can't help but root for him. I mean,
yeah,
just the way they set up that whole history with him. I mean, we all know his history, but to see it visually, that was a throwback too to X-Men 1, right? That was the same scene.
I don't think it was the exact same scene, but it was pretty. Yeah, they recreated it, and I love the coin, and...
Oh, man, I know. Big spoiler alert. Fast forward a minute, if you don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, the way he killed Shaw.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It worked perfectly, because, you know, fast, you know, friction to Shaw, you know, he's going to absorb it, but slow and steady, it'll pass through. It's very... I hate to make this reference, but it's very Dune-esque, you know? You have a shield in Dune, you know, something slow can pass through the shield, but something fast, it will be deflected.
Yeah.
But, oh, that was so good. And the whole moment where, like, Xavier is in Shaw's mind and he's feeling the pain.
Yeah. Well, and then there were the direction. I mean, Matthew Vaughn, is that who directed this? Yeah, I think that's
right.
Anyway, there were a lot of things that he did that were just really good choices. Like in that scene where young Magneto and Shaw are talking, and you get the one side of them talking and it's like an office, but then he turns the camera and he shows you that there's this glass room where with all of these butcher knives, and this is where they experiment on all these Jews during the Holocaust. That was creepy. I mean, it just that turn of the camera showed you just how evil this guy, Kevin Bacon's character, is. And then just that whole scene with the coin and shooting his mom. Oh, it was just, I loved that. And that's not in the comic books, folks. That was all written into this movie. And it was just, that was really well done. I mean, that's a perfect Magneto story. I mean.
And what added to it, in my opinion, too, was how he's like, Shaw, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree that mutants are the next, you know, evolutionary standard, and we need to eradicate humankind. But you fucking killed my mother, dude.
That's right. And that shows you really the complexity. And I think this is what's great about the X-Men as a whole, is the level of complexity of opinions and points of view that you can use with this whole mutant, you know, thing is that you can have two people who actually share the same ideals about what mutants are and who they are and how they affect the world, but then, you know, but their motivations are completely different. And, you know, if you kill somebody's mom brutally like that, like, you know, there's hell to pay. And
yeah, it's coming back to you.
Yeah. Now,
what do you, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to talk about Shaw. Now, I did have to say, I thought Kevin Bacon was a low point of this movie.
What?
And for a couple different reasons. One, Kevin Bacon is just so recognizable. I mean, he's just in so many movies, and so I could not buy him as Shaw. I could not. I mean, I was having Footloose flashbacks. I mean, even though he didn't act that way, he took me out of the movie too many times because he's just so recognizable. The other thing is that he was such a hokey ass villain. They played him up to be like, I mean, he was like Goldfinger or you know, like, I mean, he really that whole 60s, you know, ultimate villain where he's like sitting in his, you know, he's wearing his very beautiful clothes and he's sitting in his very shagadelic you know, hideout, and I mean, I almost expected him to like pull out a cat and start, you know, stroking it, because he had that glass of, you know, whatever it was he was drinking in like almost every scene, and it was just kind of like, Okay, I just I thought they could have done better with him. I like the role that Shaw played in the movie. I liked him being the big bad. I liked all that. I liked the way that they showed his powers. But and then with Kevin Bacon wearing the Magneto helmet, I thought that was so lame. I thought he looked so stupid in that helmet. So anyway, that was just what I thought about it. But
well, interesting. I'm kind of on the opposite side of the fence with that point. Yeah. I thought Kevin Bacon was awesome.
Really?
I really liked him. I mean, I've seen Footloose. I used to do musical theater in my day, but you know, I honestly I liked him. I don't know. I really don't have many things to say that are negative about it. The helmet thing was weird. But at the same point, I mean, it was a cool way to introduce how Magneto gets it.
I loved all that. I liked the role that the helmet played. But it was really just the visual of Kevin Bacon. It was not the role.
Didn't bother me. Honestly, yeah. It did not bother me. It did not take me out of it. Maybe it's a generational thing.
Hey, how old do you think I am?
Well,
I'm only 33.
Well, you've got like 7 years on me. I mean, you were 14 when I was 7. I mean, right. It makes
that's
a difference.
True. That's true. I was watching Kevin Bacon movies in the 80s.
Right. You know, I mean, I saw Tremors. Yeah. Tremors was my first Kevin Bacon experience.
Okay. All right.
You know, not Footloose.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have that psychological connection. But at the same time, I don't know. It didn't bother me. Like, it really didn't bug me. I mean, since we're talking about the Hellfire Club, what did bug was Emma.
Oh, I hated her. They missed a huge opportunity with Emma. She could have been, she could have been a scene stealer if they had played her as bitchy as she really is in the comics.
Yes. Yes.
But instead, January Jones is just such a flat, uninteresting,
You kind of said it at the beginning. You were like, X-Men fans, hardcore X-Men fans won't dig it. But non-X-Men fans will. If you're not that familiar with the X-Men, Emma Frost is an okay character in this movie. But if you know Emma Frost as the character, like how hardcore she is, I mean how, venomous she truly was back in her heyday in the early 80s. Like,
and even still on the X-Men now, she's bitchy. I mean, that's just her character.
She wasn't sexy enough. I hate to say it. I'm sorry.
Right?
She wasn't hard enough.
Yeah.
She wasn't like, I'm that woman that the second you lay eyes on me, you submit.
Right, right.
That was missing.
All she was just a blonde chick in a white costume. And I felt like they really missed an opportunity with her. She could have really been somebody. And then when they go back in the end and Magneto recruits her, how much more awesome would that have been if she was just a really strong, bitchy character? Like, if she had been that, then, I mean,
you've got two leaders. You have two leaders now.
Yeah, you would have been like, oh, yeah. Like, but when they went back to her, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about her. I just didn't care. I didn't care about her. And I also thought the CGI of her in her diamond form was very poorly done. But that's a technical thing.
I think that's a budget thing. I mean,
Yeah.
I thought that at first, and then I kind of like got over it, and I was like, all right, whatever. I mean, this is what it is. You know, it wasn't as bad as Beast's makeup, in my opinion. But
yeah,
I mean, like, if you're just watching the movies and you're following movie continuity, Emma's probably a passable character. But like you said, like we know her, we've been reading the comics. I mean, Dark Phoenix Saga, I mean, that character is, I mean, she's twisted, she's dark, and that was just missing with her. And yeah, I mean, maybe that would come into play later on. Maybe she's going to make a bid to lead the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants in the X-Men First Class sequel. I mean, who knows, right? But
right,
she could have been cast better. She could have been played better. I think they did miss a little bit with her.
Agreed.
Without a doubt.
Agreed.
What did you think about the whole naming process? How we got our code names?
I thought it was kind of a cute way to do it. I mean, I liked the fact that they were all kind of sitting around not doing anything, and that was what they decided to do. I don't know. I kind of didn't think much about that scene really, but
I like that Mystique name Magneto, and that it stuck because she later joined him. I mean, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, going back to the Hellfire Club, what did you think of Azazel and I guess that was Riptide, who is actually a isn't he on the Marauders? I think he's
okay. I'm glad you recognized him, because I referenced him as Tornado Guy. I had no fucking clue who that guy was.
I had to go back and look on IMDb on the list of the credits to see who it was. But once it, you know, because I kept thinking, okay, I know that there's a Tornado-ish character in the X-Men mythos, but I can't remember what his name was. So it was Riptide. But Riptide in the comic books is one of the Marauders, and he's a very backgroundy kind of character. But I thought he was kind of stupid. I mean, just he didn't have any lines. He was just and he was kind of like the part I think that like Arclight played in X-Men 3. I mean, there have been other kind of background henchmen kind of characters that they try to like play up with this really cool power, and he's like, ooh, you know, I'm standing there and all of a sudden there's a tornado in my hand. But I
look mean.
Yeah, and he was wearing a suit the whole time. I just was like,
oh, it was Hellfire Club, you know?
I know, but they're at the end in that very last scene. They're like in the submarine, and they're like doing all this submarine-y things, and they're wearing like Armani suits, and I was like, that is so dorky. Now Azazel, on the other hand, I mean, you know, I thought he pulled off the suit well. But anyway, what did you think of Riptide?
Okay, Riptide, this is my note for him. Tornado Guy was weak sauce. Nice seeing him get his ass kicked.
Yes, agreed.
I mean, yeah, obviously they needed him. I mean, the final scene, they're in the ocean. He can create a tornado, the waters stir up, blah, 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 whatever, right?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, he was a good henchman to get his butt kicked. I mean, when Magneto just slammed the submarine wall down on him and just marched right through, that was hilarious.
That was great.
It was so good. Here he is. He's like, brr, and then bam.
Yeah. What'd you think of Azazel?
You know, going in, I thought he was corny as hell, but seeing the movie, they did a good job of making him a badass.
Were you reading X-Men during when Chuck Austin?
Yes, that's when I got back into X-Men. So I love his Iceman development, and I know he sucked beyond that. But
you even liked that Havoc had to pee in order to create
save Iceman.
Yeah. Anyway,
that was dumb.
But anyway, I actually thought that Azazel was actually done pretty well as kind of a henchman character. And they needed, I mean, one of the things that everyone loved about X2 was Nightcrawler, and so they needed that. They needed to pull him in. I could see why they pulled him in, because visually he's very noticeable, but also his powers are cool, and they did so well with Nightcrawler in X2 that, you know, I could see why they pulled him in. So,
right, and I mean, that scene where, you know, they usurp the CIA facility and he just fucking ransacks everybody there. I mean, I love the moment where he had the guy in front of him and he had him wrapped around with his tail.
Yeah.
And as the actor, I mean, the actor, Azazel, as the character, was just standing there. But with his tail, he was moving the guy.
Uh-huh.
I, that was so cool to me. Like,
I wish that the fight scene between Beast and Azazel had been a little more... I wish they had...
Shown
that more and choreographed it really well, because I think that could have been like freaking Darth Maul lightsaber scene awesome. I mean,
I don't disagree. Like, that was, even though, I mean, even though how they did it, it was still interesting. But yes, they could have really expanded that as like, hey, this is a pinnacle fight, this is a key fight in the scene, you know, it matters. This is Beast's moment to really cut loose and be a beast and take out this baddie who is badass.
Yeah. Speaking of Beast, I liked him a lot. I didn't have the problems with his makeup. Some people were like, oh, that was kind of cheesy. But, you know, the people I went with kind of said that. But but what I really liked, and this is another thing that's not in the comics, but it just made sense about the whole cure thing, which is a good... seed that was, you know, kind of followed up on in X3 with the cure. but also making the reason that Beast is blue is because he used Mystique's blood
DNA?
To create that cure. And I just thought that made so much sense. It was great. I mean, in the comic books, Beast is just blue and Mystique is just blue. Like, there's no connection. There's no connection between them at all. And I just thought that was a cool way to tie those two characters together and make sense of their blueness. And that's just how it was in the movie.
Like, you know, I do have to interject. I mean, you put your foot down with the Xavier point.
Yes.
This plot line with Beast developing a cure has come into play in the comics.
Oh, yeah. I know that. I'm talking about, but using Mystique's.
Oh, okay. Touché.
Using Mystique's.
Sure.
Yeah, using Mystique's DNA or blood or whatever it was, maybe I'm reading into this because it was not clearly said, but the reason that Beast is blue in the movie is because of Mystique. Whereas in the comic book, Beast is just blue, and Mystique is just blue, and there's no connection there between their blueness. But I just thought that was kind of a cool way to explain it. Like, oh, all right, well, that makes sense why he's blue and she's,
Since we're on that, that was basically the love story of the series, Beast, or of this movie, Beast with Mystique. And in all honesty, it was, a total of 2 minutes, maybe tops?
Well, there was a little bit of Moira and Xavier. There was a little bit.
Yeah, but it was weak. I mean, come on. It wasn't like the focus. It wasn't, Shadowcat, true. Iceman.
True.
Or Rogue Iceman, sorry.
Right.
Not Shadowcat. Or Shadowcat was in it, too, in the third one.
Yeah, in the third one. Right.
It was. But regardless, I mean, I think the detachment of a love story with this film also surfaced it very, very well.
Yeah. I agree.
It made it less cheesy. Like, the whole Jean Cyclops thing, that's epic. That's always going to be there. But the fact that you didn't have to play to that or feel forced to incorporate that into the film, I think it really helped.
I agree. I never thought of that, but you're right. That it didn't take you out of the story. And especially, I'm really glad that they didn't do anything like that really with Magneto. I mean, he does share a kiss with Mystique, but it's not played up at all. Because I think a love interest would have really hindered Magneto. And I was really glad. I almost thought when I was reading before I saw the movie, I was really kind of expecting maybe there to be a love triangle between Magneto and Moira and Charles.
Xavier.
But they didn't, that wasn't in there at all. And I was so glad that they kept Magneto kind of separate in that sense.
It totally worked.
Yeah.
I know you're a fan of this character. And he was in the movie.
I know.
Talk to me about Darwin.
I thought Darwin was great, but you cannot kill freaking Darwin, and especially that way. I mean, come on. Okay, what the listeners may not know is that Andy and I met through a website called Comic Collector Live, and on there we battle folks in a contest of champions that character.
We're nerds.
Yeah, we're nerds. This is how we meet. But Darwin is my dude. Darwin is my boy, and I picked him every time. And Darwin got his ass handed to him every time I played him. But I was sitting there thinking, come on, really? Like, Shaw is just gonna, his power is adaptability. I didn't understand that. If his power was adaptability, he can't be killed. Then how could Shaw kill him? I mean, come on.
I agree. I when I saw that character, I was like, I didn't read a lot of spoilers going into this film, so I didn't know who the cast was going to be. And when I saw that guy, I mean, Darwin was, he was this black dude driving a taxi, and I'm like, who is this character? I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. And then, we figure out, oh, it's Darwin. He sticks his head in the fish tank. I'm like, oh, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with him? And then, Shaw sticks that energy ball down his throat. And, we get the flash and transition to the next scene. I'm like, oh, what did Darwin evolve into? Wait, he died?
Yeah.
What?
Well, I did like how they – I liked how when he did die, it wasn't just he just died. Like, he did try to adapt. And I guess what you could say is, Darwin is not you know, he's a new mutant. He doesn't really know his powers, and so that's, you know, but still, come on, really? And you know, pairing him with Angel and the female Angel from Grant Morrison's run, who I don't like that character in the comics. I thought the girl who played her, who's actually the daughter of Lenny Kravitz.
What?
Yeah, that's who that was, Zoe Kravitz. I thought she was a good visual representation of the character, and she actually played the character well. And you're not supposed to like her. I mean, she's kind of a bitch in the comic, and she
dates Beak. Come on.
Yeah. Well, and later
she has kids. She has babies.
Yeah. Now she does, and that. Anyway, but. I just hate her. I hate her character. I hated her in this movie. I didn't like the fact that she betrayed them and all that. But I wish they had killed her instead of Darwin. That's what I'm saying.
I don't disagree. I mean, her whole thing, like, yes, we must join, you know, the bad guys. I mean, that seemed a bit abrupt. It was like, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, speaking of, since we're talking about, like, the X-Men, how they, you know, recruited the cast. What'd you think of that, you know, 5-minute scene where they recruited everybody?
I loved that. And I loved it. Yeah. I loved the scene where they did that. And of course, I mean, you gotta, the Wolverine cameo was just perfect. I mean,
spot on.
I didn't see that coming at all. In fact, I was kind of like, this is great. And actually I made a comment a few weeks ago on Twitter about, you know, wow, they're actually selling an X-Men movie without Hugh Jackman and without Wolverine. Like, it can be done, you know? And so the fact that they never said anything about that, and they just barely put him in, and they did it right. And I love that. I thought that was hilarious. And then he says,
you can say it.
No, I can't remember what it was. What did he say?
He says, fuck off.
Oh, yeah, he says, fuck off. I just thought that was great. And they didn't, I like the fact that they didn't shy away from using the F word there, because that was just perfect. That was just perfect. I love that.
And then right away, they both just walk out.
Yeah, they didn't even try to convince him. They just walked right out.
That was perfect. I mean, I remember seeing that. I was laughing on that scene like minutes later.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. That was great. Now, I will say my favorite of the recruited characters was, the one that was most, like, spot on was Banshee. I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he is, the visuals of him, once he gets his, I never understood, I just thought Banshee could fly. Like, that was just part of his power. He could fly along with screaming.
Oh, you didn't get that? He always screams when he flies.
Yeah, well, right, but I didn't realize it was because of the scream that allowed him to fly. I just never got that. And I never got that from the comics. I don't know why. But that was done so well, and it made so much sense. And to see it visually just made me love that character even more. I mean, I love Banshee anyway, and you know, it sucks that he's dead in the comics, but
there's still Banshee. What do you mean?
There's no Banshee in the comics. He was killed.
Yes, there is.
Well, there's Siren, who's
going by Banshee.
Oh, I know, but that's so stupid because now her powers are actually more like a Siren than they are a Banshee. But anyway, but Sean Cassidy Banshee. I thought he was great, and he was hilarious in some scenes too. The where he falls out of the window, I thought that was great. That was good.
Sorry, I was talking to the baby.
Oh, it's okay. That's okay.
She's getting fed real quick. Can you edit that part out?
Sure.
What did you just say? She was flying to the what?
Oh, when Banshee fell out of the window, I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, and Magneto just shoves him out.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
So what did you think of Havoc?
I thought he was perfect. I thought his depiction, his bravado, you know, his, dare say, arrogance.
Yeah.
I love that it was all there. I thought he looked the part. I don't have a problem that he's the older brother now and it's not Scott. I mean, who cares, really?
Right.
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. No. Really. Not in this And because of Scott's appearance in the Wolverine movie, you know, I kind of was fine with that, you know. I kind of wish it had been Cyclops, just because it made sense for him to be there. You know, because he was one of the original X-Men. But I mean, I know with the continuity issues with the other movies that it did make sense. But I did. But I thought the energy that Havok had that kind of looked like Cyclops. I mean, he played that role. It just fit well, and I appreciated that. I thought that was cool.
So since you're talking about the other movies, what did you think about the whole thing, you know? Shit, what was I going to talk about? I had it written down, and I was looking at it, and then I think I accidentally deleted it. So we're going to edit that part out.
Okay.
Oh, no, now I know, now I know.
Okay.
So speaking with the other movies in terms of continuity, what do you think about the whole Emma Frost thing? Was she in the other movies? That was Diamond Girl, right? Not Emma Frost?
Well, okay, I think, I could be wrong, but I think that if all of the movies are in one continuity with each other, then that would mean that the Wolverine movie actually takes place first. Because if that is Emma in that Wolverine movie as Diamond Girl, then she could have grown up and become the Hellfire Club person, you know?
No, it doesn't work because that takes place inside of the Xavier Mansion.
What does?
That whole scene where she shows up, right?
No. I don't know. What other movie was she in?
In the Wolverine movie, where was that? Was that in the Weapon X facility, or was that in Xavier's mansion?
That was in the Weapon X facility, I think.
Well, there you go. Okay. All right.
I think it could fit together. If not, that's just another Diamond Girl, I guess. I don't know. but speaking of continuity, I mean, so this is a prequel to the other, you know, the first three movies. And The one thing that I had a little bit of trouble with was, if Mystique and Xavier were that close with each other, then why in the other three movies did they not even acknowledge each other? Like, it just seems like if this was a real prequel, then maybe they could have had a scene later on that was like, and I know, just in with the it would have felt so out of context in those other three movies, but it's like he didn't even talk to her, and like they grew up together.
Maybe we'll get that in the sequels.
Maybe Xavier eventually wipes her mind clean or something of their.
I mean, speaking of the sequels, I mean, if they do sequels, they're gonna have to kill off a shit ton of characters, right?
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, we can't have a Banshee. We can't have a Havoc. You know, we can't have an Angel later on. I mean, there's just no way. And Azazel. I mean, these guys got to go.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Even Emma.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean,
something has to happen.
Yeah, because they're not represented in the other movies, so.
What did you think of Moira not being Irish?
Well, I thought that was kind of, well, at first I didn't know it was Moira. I thought, who is this lady? And then they kept calling her, and so I was like, okay, a girl named Moira MacTaggert working as a high up CIA agent in the 60s and as a female, like, I just thought, this is bizarre. Like, this it was too much of a tie-in. I think they could have included Moira in there somewhere, but they didn't really need her character. I didn't feel like. I think it could have been, you know, I don't know if you remember, if you read those early issues of X-Men, but there was a CIA agent that was buddies with Charles Xavier in the first run of X-Men. His name was Fred Duncan, and he was a CIA agent. And I thought that he, you know, they could have just made that Fred Duncan and led that, you know, had that same connection, because I did like the connection of the X-Men to the CIA, and that's how they kind of first formed, but then later on kind of had to go underground. You know, I liked that. I thought that was a logical way for them to get, like, for Xavier to get their, you know, stuff like Cerebro and the Blackbird and all of those things. I mean, that made sense that that'd be a government connection.
Right. I mean, it definitely played to the whole theme of the film, without a doubt. So it didn't bother you then?
I mean, it kind of did. I wish he had been... And actually, if you're talking about continuity, Moira does show up in the hidden scene in one of the X-Men movies.
The hidden scene?
There's a hidden scene in, I think it's X-Men 2. No, it's X-Men, it's X3. At the very end, there's a hidden scene where, because Xavier dies in X3, right? Yeah,
that's right. Correct.
And so, but there's a scene where there's like a guy in a hospital bed, and Moira MacTaggert is there, and all of a sudden he wakes up, and it's Charles Xavier's voice.
That's right. That was the scene after the credits.
Right. That's what I mean. Right. But anyway, that part of Moira was played by an English actress, and she has an accent in that scene. So
maybe they're just vouching on the fact that nobody stayed and watched that scene.
Maybe.
So I got to say, I love the whole throwback. I know this is silly, but I mean, the movies ended on it. Xavier playing chess with Magneto.
Yeah.
I love that you saw that throughout this film.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
It was just a great little thing, you know. Nothing big, just a little Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're playing chess in the beginning and the end of, what was it, X3 maybe? Or was it X2? Where Magneto gets put in the prison? Honestly, I don't remember which one it was. But
yeah.
I mean, that was just great. You know, I mean, they're playing, you know, they're friends and... This is kind of the bookend, you know.
Right.
What did you think about how Xavier gets confined to the wheelchair?
Oh, I loved that. I thought that was really. I mean, it was. I wasn't like, okay, how? I mean, I figured he was going to lose the use of his legs in the movie. I figured that was going to happen, but I wasn't sure how it was going to happen. I wasn't really looking for it. And then, so when it actually happened, I was like, whoa, okay. So now he's paralyzed. And I loved how James McAvoy played that scene. I mean, it was very emotional. And finally, when he's like, I can't feel my legs, like, there was some emotion there that I was like, wow, okay, you know, shit just got real, you know, like, I like that.
Who of all the new mutants were your favorite?
Banshee, I think, was. But you know, with the whole Mystique thing, you know, if she said mutant and proud one more time, I was gonna throw my shoe at the screen. I just was like, okay, we get it. And she said it like three or four, like it was like every scene in the end, like the last third of the film, like she said that, and I was like, come on, like. That was a little much.
Well, you know, they were playing to contemporary politics, and
yeah, they were,
without a doubt. I mean, so whatever. I like that. That was kind of like they used that for her to align with Magneto.
Yeah,
you know, where Xavier's kind of like, "Whoa, hey, you look kind of weird."
Yeah, I thought that was a good portrayal of Xavier because. That shows some of his flaws in terms of how he sees mutants. Like, you know, when she walks in and she's butt naked, he's like, you know, whoa, wait a second. You know, you need to put some clothes on. Like, and I like that explanation for why Mystique walks around naked all the time. Because that's also not a comic thing, but, you know, whatever, you know?
Speaking of, how awesome was that Wolverine issue?
Which Wolverine issue? Oh, the number 9?
Yeah.
Wolverine number 9 was incredible.
Yeah, it was.
For those of you who may be listening and are not reading X-Men books, the Wolverine series that Jason Aaron is writing right now is just awesome. And that's a good place. It's only on issue number 9, so it's a good place to kind of pick up and see what's going on in the X-Books right now. But
and if you want to just pick it up at issues, start with issue 6.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And you can just jump right in and easily figure out what's going on.
Well, really, you could jump on with issue 9, too. I mean,
it's true.
And it was just a really strong issue. But that was definitely my pick. Overall, I thought this was great. You know, I was kind of hoping that they would just reboot the whole thing and just kind of start from scratch with this. But, you know, because this was in continuity with the other X-Men movies, I thought, you know, this is okay. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're nitpicky about the continuity issues, you know, Xavier and Mystique's relationship, you know, all of those little nitpicky things, then you're not going to like this movie. But I'm wondering if you liked any of the other X-Men movies too, because they're not really in keeping with the comics either. But
now our friend Nick Zamora, who obviously writes Stay Tuned Sundays with ComicAttack.net, good friend, he hated this movie.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, there have been a couple of our friends from Comic Attack. I think Infinite Speech, I don't think he liked it either. So, you guys need to, you know, write us and tell us where you disagree with us and let us know what you think about this. Because
yeah, by all means, comment on the article.
Yeah, know? Definitely comment, and because we definitely want to hear from folks, and you know, if there's some different opinions out there, I think that makes for some good dialogue. So definitely. Tell us what you think and email us or comment on the post that we put for this show.
I saw this film with my fiance, mm-hmm. and it was also my 3-month-old child's first ever theatrical movie.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. She sat through the whole thing, didn't fuss once, didn't scream, didn't cry. We had to feed her once, but she didn't make any noise, and she was watching the screen for the final 20 minutes.
Nice.
She just watched the screen straight up. It was pretty crazy, and I'm glad her first ever theatrical film is X-Men.
So what you're saying is that she now has the image of the coin going through Shaw's head.
She does.
Burned into her mind, and so
did witness that. Yes, that is true.
That's
but
awesome.
I only bring it up because my fiance, her favorite X-Men movie is the third one.
What?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's do this right now. Let's rank the X-Men movies thus far.
Okay, let's do it.
Starting with the worst. What is your least favorite?
All right, my least favorite is X-Men 1.
Okay,
and the reason being is because it was totally not what I was expecting going in, and I left it just being like, "What the hell?" Mm-hmm. I get it; it's Ultimate X-Men, but no.
Yeah.
I hated Rogue. I hated everything. I just did not like it.
Right.
So X-1 is my worst.
My worst is the Wolverine movie.
I figured.
Yeah, that one was the least my least favorite. But that was, you know, I only saw it once, and that's a good sign that says, you know, I really didn't like it. So I don't really remember a lot of it. But yeah, it was definitely my least favorite. Okay, so what's your number four?
Number four. Number four for me would be Wolverine.
Okay.
I didn't hate it as much as other people. Reason being, I saw it about a year and a half after it had come out in theaters.
Okay.
I saw it at a buddy's house, you know, so I had read all the reviews. I had heard everybody's criticism, so I knew that going in. And going in knowing that people hated it, I actually didn't mind it too much. Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't like the liberties they took. I hated the scene where, you know, he's got the dead girl in his arms, and he's like, "Nah!" And it's like, hey, come on, it's Wolverine. He'd smell that it's, you know, not real blood. But beyond that, I liked the cameos of the X-Men. I was entertained. I didn't hate it.
Right. Right.
So, how about you?
My number four, I think, is going to be X-3. And really, because of one thing that I just could not, it just bothered me so bad, was that in that final scene where, you know, Dark Phoenix is just pounding Wolverine, and like he's walking up to her, and like his skin is like flailing off, and like you could see his adamantium skeleton, and but yet his pants are still on right in the place that, I mean, I just thought that was just, I know why they had to do that, but I just thought, why put him in that scenario? It was just so lame. And just the fact that they kind of, and the fact they killed Cyclops, they killed Xavier, and all that, I just was like, what is this? This is crazy. So that was definitely my number four.
My number three would be X2.
Okay, I know. Tell me why.
I'm not a huge Nightcrawler fan. So I think this movie is severely biased because I think a lot of people love Nightcrawler. So the fact that Nightcrawler was in it, a lot of people were like, oh yeah, X2, yeah, Nightcrawler. Alan Cumming, yeah. To me, it was more of the same as X1. I was just like, okay, all right,
You have no soul.
Sorry, man. I didn't really like it.
You're dead inside.
It was number three, you know? It's in the middle.
Okay, all right. My number three is X-Men 1, is the first X-Men movie, because... But the reason I rate it higher is because it was the first real comic book movie of its kind. I mean, yes, there was Blade and that kind of stuff, but this was the first like mainstream Marvel movie, and I liked it. I remember seeing it. Now, if I were to watch it today, I probably would have some big reservations, but there were some definitely corny things. I hated Halle Berry as Storm. I hated her in Storm as Storm, and especially, you know, there were some really cheesy lines and things like that. But you know, overall, it was my first experience of seeing my favorite characters on the big screen, and so that's why it gets my number three.
Well, number two for me is X3.
Really? Okay.
I'm sorry. I was just entertained throughout the whole thing. I mean, I liked that they killed people. I was like, all right, yeah, let's get rid of these characters. Let's just wipe them off the map. Just get them gone. I liked the action. I hated the Juggernaut bitch line. I thought that was so fucking stupid. I'm sorry.
I kind of liked that, actually.
I hated it. Yeah. But I like Shadowcat. Iceman had an okay scene. I still don't like Iceman in the films. But X3, I just thought there was a lot of action. I liked Kelsey Grammer as Beast.
My number two goes to X2. Admittedly, I am a huge Nightcrawler fan. I mean, he is my favorite X-Man. But... and I thought Alan Cumming was great, but the reason I really liked that is I loved the death of Jean Grey scene. I thought that was, I mean, that moved me. I mean, I'm not saying I broke down and cried, but I was like, I just remember it just harkened back to the emotion of the comic so well. And I loved that that's how they ended that movie. And the reaction from both Scott and Wolverine, I thought was great. I loved that, and X2 is up there. So are we both saying that this X-Men movie is our favorite? That First
I think
Class
we are.
Is our favorite?
I think we are. I just think it wasn't great. I mean, it was great in the sense that, yes, it was a comic book film. But I really sincerely believe that if you bring somebody into this film who is not a comic book fan or familiar with X-Men, they will come out really enjoying it.
I agree.
I don't think there were any moments really in this film where you're like, oh man, that's so corny. Oh, that's so cheesy. And I think in the previous four movies, there are scenes like that where they're just uncomfortable to watch because they're just so bad. But I think this movie doesn't have that. And honestly, I think it's because there's no love story.
You're right. There were no scenes that I just thought were overly cheesy. I mean, the only thing that I thought was cheesy was the Mutant and Proud stuff. I thought that
was delivered in the case of a line or two.
Yes, right.
They didn't dwell on it for 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, and I just think this really did a great job of, obviously this was Magneto's movie. It did an excellent job of showing why Magneto's as pissed as he is, okay? Why Xavier is able to balance him out for a short time. But then, I mean, you can't... I mean, it's tough to fault him for why he descends. If you were in that situation, confronted with your mother's killer who murdered her in cold blood right in front of you, just as a sick game to F with your head, would you react any differently? I don't know. You'd like to think so, but can you fault Magneto?
No, I cannot. Yeah. And that's why Magneto is really one of my favorite Marvel characters, is that, you know, and for those of you who may be listening and aren't X-Men fans, go read Greg Pak's
Magneto Testament.
It's called X-Men Magneto Testament. Go find it on Amazon. Go get it at a local comic book store. Pick it up. It is one of the best X-Men, and it doesn't really have any X-Men in it. It doesn't even have Magneto in a suit in it. But it is one of the best Marvel stories done in the last 10 years, I think. It may be even longer. I mean, it's one of my very, very favorite Marvel stories. Just because I just love Magneto. I love the fact that, you know, there's such a dichotomy with him. And really, even when he's played up in the comics as a huge villain, I love him. And when he's played up as a hero, I love him. Like, I mean, he's just, either way, I just really love Magneto.
I agree, man. Like, this, I mean, how can you not love him as a protagonist / antagonist? I mean, the guy, like, he's the perfect gray area.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've covered this in the X-Piles. Like, I just love how he has recognized Cyclops as the man being able to find that midpoint between Xavier's dream and his vision.
Right.
I mean, that is Cyclops, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Magneto's ability to recognize that and be like, hey, all I've wanted to do is unite mutant kind under one umbrella, and you've done that.
Right.
You know, maybe I've used different methods than you, but you've accomplished that. And I think that's where Schism is headed. Wolverine's going to be questioning Cyclops' motives. Like, hey, look, you are teetering on the brink of evil here, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Yeah, yeah. So really, for those folks out there who have seen the X-Men, saw X-Men First Class, and you're maybe thinking, okay, now where do I go to get involved with the X-Men books? Coming up pretty soon, I think in the next couple of weeks, in fact, the next X event, which is called Schism, is coming out. And really, the main four players are Xavier, Magneto, Cyclops, and Wolverine. And so if you want to jump on, really pick up Schism and start reading from there, because I think Jason Aaron, who's the writer, is a really strong writer. I mean, he's killing things on books like Wolverine, books like Scout, which is a Vertigo book. Is that Vertigo? Yeah. And yes. He's just a great writer. So, you know, if you want a good jumping on point for the X-Men, and yes, the X-Men are hindered by 40 years of convoluted continuity and backstory, which I happen to love, but it's because I know that continuity. But if for new folks, jump on to the X books right now and keep reading the X piles on comicattack.net, because we cover every X book and then some in order to draw people in to these books. And there's some great ones out there, and there are some not great ones. But actually, that was a question I was going to ask you, Andy. You know, for a new reader, where would you lead them in terms of books?
As a retailer, the one I always show them is Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, if there's one book that's going to get people into X-Men, it's that book. I mean, I just think it's the best.
Agreed. Yeah, right now it is the strongest. So Uncanny X-Force as opposed to Uncanny X-Men, which Uncanny X-Men right now is pretty strong too, at least from my point of view. But
it's good, but at the same time, like, I don't know if I would present a new reader with this storyline.
I agree, right. Yeah, and so yes, go, you know, f- for new folks, go check out Uncanny X-Force.
And I'd say X-Men Schism Prelude. I mean, it's all Xavier, it's all Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I mean, check that out, you know?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's a really good place. That's a really strong book. Again, you know, we mentioned it earlier in the show that Wolverine is really strong right now. So
that series is phenomenal.
Yeah. Those two, Uncanny X-Force and Wolverine, are probably the strongest ones right now.
And the Brian K. Vaughan Mystique Ultimate Collection just came out as well, which I highly recommend picking up. Just a fantastic Mystique story.
I forgot completely that Brian K. Vaughan wrote that. I love
him. So good. So good.
I don't think I've read it.
I mean, if you're... Really?
I don't think I have.
Dude, basically the gist is this. Mystique, you know, being the player she's been throughout her history, there are a bunch of countries' governments that are after her and they want her eliminated. So she seeks refuge with Xavier, and Xavier is basically like, look, we cannot just have you chill in the school. Like, there's no way that can happen. You know, you've been a longtime villain of ours. Just won't work. So here's what I'll have you do. I'll have you perform my covert operations for me. But if you get captured, if you get killed, you don't know me. Like, this is totally detached. So basically, Mystique was the one woman X-Force before X-Force.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Really good. I highly recommend it. Highly recommend checking it out. And if you want to read more Emma, the Emma Frost Ultimate Collection just came out as well. But I think a better place to jump on would be maybe Astonishing X-Men. Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, I agree. That's just a great... That's a great run.
Or Grant Morrison's new X-Men as well.
Yeah,
anywhere in there.
Yeah, that's great.
Jeff, any closing thoughts on the film? Anything else you want to say?
I will just say, you know, go see it. Really, go see it. Even if you're, you know, if you're not a, you know, maybe you didn't like Thor, or maybe you did like Thor, but, you know, this is just a completely different movie. And I think it will stand out with all of the movies that are coming out this summer, comic book movies. I think this one will kind of stand out as something that's different, but something that's fantastic. So yeah, I would definitely give this a good mark.
I agree. Dare I say it's excellent?
Oh, come on.
Maybe it's exceptional.
It will make you excited.
Is it extraordinary?
It is. It is all those things.
No, but seriously, I think you can bring this one with friends who maybe aren't comic book fans, and they just might dig this as a film.
That's right. Yeah.
So give it a shot. And be sure to check out our column, The Uncanny X-Files, every week at comicattack.net. So... thanks for tuning in. Yeah.
Send us your emails. Jeff@comicattack.net.
Andy@comicattack.net. And we'll see you around.
Thanks a lot.